Yo, back to the future, the past at last. Nostalgia topics on our dope podcast. We can get serious or we can get crazy. Covering the 2000s, 90s, 80s. Where else you get a conversation like this? A bit of the past that you don't want to miss. Like a throwback jersey giving you thoughts of the past. Like a home run hitter on that solo blast. This podcast, you don't want to skip. Mentally skinny dip on this nostalgia trip.
What's going on, everybody? It is me. I am back again. This time I have a very, very special guest. I have Mr. Glenn Leonard, very legendary voice, very legendary presence. And if you don't know this guy, he's obviously a former member of the Temptations. So we're going to get into all of that. Got a lot of success. So Glenn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Every day above ground is a great day. What can I tell you?
Yeah, that is true. Especially how stuff happens. But hey, I'm glad that you're still here. Like, we get to have this conversation. It's very nice. So before we get into the temps and everything you're doing now and everything, just talk about Glenn, the kid growing up. Glenn as a kid? Like, how was your upbringing?
Well, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., as you know. That's where I'm from, born and raised. Raised between Washington, D.C. and North Carolina, Durham, Raleigh, Rocky Mount. So I got a mixture of city and southern background and upbringing. I'm the second eldest of seven children. And we grew up poor, struggling. You know, always needing things, the bills paid, needed food on the table, clothes on our back. Kind of give you an idea of how dire the situation was. Things stick out from your past, right? I don't know why this sticks out, but I was in the fifth grade, I believe it was, something like that, little guy. And I was standing at the street corner line, waiting to cross. And back in those days, you used to have what we call patrol boys and girls. If you were a good student, had good grades, you know, good attendance and all that kind of stuff, they would let you be on patrol. They'd give you a little belt and a little badge, you know, and you thought you was the man.
I was a part of the patrol as well.
Okay, they still do it. Well, I'm standing at this corner, waiting to cross the light, and a little patrol guy, he's got his arms stretched out. So he happens to look down, and he sees my feet hanging off the curb. I mean, by a long way. And he says, "Wow, man, you must have your father's shoes on." And I did. I had my daddy's shoes on because I didn't have any. And those shoes had holes in the ground with cardboard in the foot in the bottom of them. So they kind of give you an idea of how we grew up.
Can you remember, like, so not to say your quote unquote audition process or anything, but can you remember like that first meeting?
Joe Blunt stayed in touch with me, right? So Joe called me one day and says, "Hey man, just thought I'd give you a holler, see how you doing." He said, "Got some news for you." He said, "You ain't gonna believe this though." I said, "Try me." He said, "Tony Sylvester, who was the guy that was, he was in a group called Main Agree. Tony was our producer." He said, "Tony called me and told me that he ran into Otis." I said, "Otis who?" He said, "Otis Williams." He said, and they got to talking, and Otis was playing some things that they were working on. And Tony said, "Let me let you hear this guy I got." And so Tony plays a song that we had just recorded that they were going to feature me on. And Otis is listening. He's like, "Wow, who is this guy?" So he asked Tony, he says, "Who is he? You got any information on him?" Tony said, "You can't get it. We got him locked up. We got him signed to a 7-year deal, and you know what we're going to do. We're going to bounce that over. As soon as he hit the year five, we're going to sign him to another one." So he says, so Otis said, "Oh, okay." Otis backs off. I said, get in touch with Tony. You tell Tony he need to call me. So Tony called me. I said, listen, man, that's my spot. I said, my guys have heard me say one day I was going to sing with that group. I can't tell you that I knew that. I felt it inside of me. And here it is. That's my spot. It ain't like this came out of nowhere. I was saying this. I've been following them, watching them, studying them, getting myself ready, grooming myself for Eddie's spot. That's my, So Tony said, I got it. So he called Otis and told Otis his family. And so I got Tony to work some things with Atlanta. They let me out the deal. And so I talked to Otis. And he says, man, you sound pretty good. He says, what we want to do is bring you out here, check you out, and see where we go from there. He says, so what we want to do is send you a round trip ticket. So I said, well, do this. Just make it one way. So Otis said, oh, you got it like that? I said, I don't mean to sound arrogant or cocky, but if I don't make it with you all, I will make it. I said, I just need to be aware of the making of this happen. So he said, I got you. So he said, you got it. So send me a ticket. I didn't take no luggage. I didn't have one stitch other than what I had on my back. I left my group. I left my hustle. I ain't gonna talk about nothing else I left, but I left a whole bunch, left a whole bunch of stuff. I had a house, couple cars, left all of that to my peeps. That was part of my crew, environment, whatever. I get off the plane. I'm just with this long brown trench coat on, and I'm coming down the escalator. Otis told me to meet him in the luggage claim. I said, okay. Even though I didn't have no luggage, that's what he said, meet. So I met. I'm coming down the escalator. So first person I see is Melvin. So Melvin looks up. Melvin says, there he is right there. And his big old voice. And so they looked up and they said, he ain't got no luggage. So we go out to the car, we get the car. And I think it was Dennis had this Mercedes, convertible Mercedes. So we're going over to Otis's house, Otis and Melvin's house to check me out. So we get in the car, everybody's quiet. Nobody says nothing. So I'm like, okay, they don't like me, I can tell. But that's okay. Everybody ain't gonna like you. Everybody ain't gonna be for you. So they don't say that. So all of a sudden, Dennis starts singing. So I jump right in with my part. And the rest of the guys sort of cut eyes at each other. So Richard came in, Otis came in, Melvin came in. So Dennis kind of looked over at him and gave him like a little head thing. And so Dennis went to another song. I jumped in on my part. So next time around, I think I started one of Eddie's songs. And they looked and said, ah, okay, he got that. He wants that. So that's when the rehearsing started. It was on from there.
When you first joined, if you mind, what do you think was the hardest routine at that time to learn?
Be honest with you, outside of what I had not seen them do, none of this stuff was really hard to me. Never has been. I think one of the misnomers about the Temptations is that they do hard stuff. They don't.
They don't. But, you know, when you're not dancing and singing, you know.
I know. Yeah. They're the first group you see move while they sing. And they did street choreography. So it didn't look hard. It looked smooth, cool. So that was the character of their type stuff, which, you know, I believe that some things are designed with certain types of abilities in mind. That was the stuff I was used to. I'd seen Lil Anthony and Imperials, who were more acrobatic, than any other group I've ever seen. I mean, you know, Lil Anthony and Pure, they used to do flips. They used to run across the stage, do a flip in the air and land in a split. That I wasn't going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to do all the choreography I could. So their stuff wasn't hard for me. And here's a little part I didn't tell you. Once the temptation bug bit me, I didn't have a problem getting on a train, a bus, or even driving as far as Philly, New York. I think one time I drove to Chicago to catch a show and turn around right after the show and head back and teach my guys what I learned. So I didn't have, I was, choreography wasn't hard for me. All I knew was this. I had a certain amount of time, a certain window to be ready. I don't want to step out on the stage after I done talked all this stuff about the temptation. And I'm getting ready to debut on the midnight special with millions of people gonna see me. I don't want to look bad. So me and Melvin went into, and he was the guy for me to hook up with, because I guess if anything, you know, when it comes to this, I'm a bit of a nerd in that sense. And that I don't mind work, hard work. As a matter of fact, all through the early years, when my guys wanted to go to the parties or go see the girlfriend, I wasn't committed to no girl. I'm about rehearsing. And the little girlfriends I had used to quit me because they say, if the weekend comes, we should go to the movies. Da, 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 da. I said, I got rehearsal, baby. Well, after rehearsal, no, we're going to be rehearsing all day, okay? And so I stopped messing with them because they interfered with my success. That was the way I thought. So me and Melvin had a vigorous rehearsal schedule. We would do like 6 hours straight, take a break, eat, rest up, hit another 6 hours, go to dinner, go home, take a nap, get up maybe like 10 o'clock, work till like midnight. Then we'd be back up at 5 a.m. We'd go to the track, we'd run, because you had to have, this is the way he was psyching me up. You will have to have great endurance. You got to be almost like an athlete, not knowing that I was. He didn't know, you know. So I had no problem with that. So we went into this severe rehearsal where I learned the whole 90-minute show and the midnight special in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And right after the midnight special, we were off to Europe. So I hit the ground running.
Wow. Obviously, we know the Temps are known for these hits, but you guys did hits in like a 10-minute medley, and then y'all were just performing other songs off the album.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So how was that? Because like, maybe people wanted to, you know, at that time, maybe My Girl wasn't as, you know, it was out for a while, or, you know, Get Ready and all that was out for a while. So you guys just say, we're going to put that in the melody, then we're going to do these newer songs to get these newer songs more attention.
The idea is you want to keep upgrading your show, and yes, you want to incorporate material from your new project into your show so people go out and buy the project. What we ran into was people were buying the project regardless, but they wanted to hear the old stuff.
Yeah.
And it reached a place to where it was a problem even trying to take anything out. Even Otis went through that. Because he and I talked about this one time. I said, man, I don't care what y'all come out with. You come out with it when you came out with Ollie, and, you know, and you did Treat Her Like a Lady and all that kind of stuff. I added in, but had to take some of the old stuff out. They said, put the other stuff back. Even promoters used to tell me, you got to put that other stuff back in, man. They're not going to let y'all get off that stage until you do it. It's like that even today. believe it or not. If you don't do my girl, get ready. The way you do the things you do, ain't too proud to beg.
Yeah.
You're not a temptation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, there are other songs that you can do. It's like, okay, sure. But like, you, those songs are like a must.
Oh, so, yeah. You got to do those. You got to do those. And of course, you got to do whatever song they're trying to play on the radio. Because, you know, I mean, the jocks are playing it. So you got to perform. That's what encouraging people up. But they saw you do it. So, you know.
I want to slightly talk about this a little bit. You were there when Dennis exited, and then when Lewis came in.
Yeah.
Was that like a big change for the group overall, or was that just like, okay, we just got a new member and that's it?
We didn't know how horrific the change was until we did it. The temps have always been pretty good at making changes. Most groups, especially lead singers, most groups, once you lose your lead singer, that group is gone. That group is over. The key, the thing with the temps is this. They have 5 lead singers.
Yes. Yes.
Only group in history that's ever had 5 guys who can handle solo and background and were good with it. For however long they managed to stay, I know egos will grow, and they eventually did, but they made it work for what the mastery was, getting the most mileage out of everybody that came. And the temps were good at that. They were very good at that.
Yeah, because I know, like, chemistry is a big thing, too. So I know, like, now probably you got to build chemistry with this person, and okay, cool. And then, oh, wait, no, we got a new member. Okay, chemistry, cool. Yeah, yeah. You know, I learn these steps again.
Yeah. And that's something, you see, you're man after my own heart, because I focus on chemistry. First thing I look for is chemistry. We got to be able to connect.
Yeah.
And that connection is not just what we do or where we come from, where we're born. It's something you can't see. There's a connection that has to happen at the core of chemistry. You gotta feel something when you're around this guy, and you gotta like what you feel. You might not like everything he say, you might not like everything he do, but the essential reason why you all are there is to make music, to produce hits. And as long as that's alive, you got chemistry. You got chemistry for a season. So chemistry is key. It's always been key with the Temps. They've been very, very good at looking for chemistry.
I don't know. People say it's there. so far.
I do have a bunch of questions, all right?
Okay.
And I'm going to try to keep these short and sweet.
All right.
But you were a part of the reunion.
Reunion,
yeah. How was maybe hearing the talks about that, and then how was, like, meeting David and Eddie? Have you met Eddie before or for the first time?
The interesting thing is, I met Eddie and Paul years before I got in the group. I think I was right out of high school. But as I told you back then, I follow them around. I go to, you know, Atlantic City, Philadelphia, wherever I could to see them. So they were at a place here in Maryland called Shady Grove. And they had a little place, a little network of motels where the entertainers would stay. And I was always pretty good at finding the information that they weren't giving out to the public. Versus where they're staying, where they're going next, all that kind of stuff. So I told my guys, I said, I'm going over there because I want to meet them. They said, man, you can't go over there. I said, I'm going. Now, are you coming? No, man. You ever seen that place? They got it fenced in. They have security because all the acts that would come would stay there. So they wouldn't let nobody up in there. But you're going to have to tell me, though. That was my thinking. So I showed up at the gate, and security guy said, where are you going, young fella? I said, I came because I need to meet the 10th. He said, you need to meet the 10th? I said, yeah, I need to meet him. He said, why? I said, because they're my idols, and one day I plan to work with them. And he says, are you serious? So Paul's room was not far from the gate. So Paul is standing in the doorway and he's listening. And he's standing there, he ain't got no shirt on. I could hear some chicks giggling in the background. So Paul's listening and they said, well, man, we can't let you in here. These guys need privacy. You know, they done did a show, they need to rest. So Paul said, let him in. So they let me through. So Paul said, come on. So I walk over to him, I introduce myself. I'm shaking. He said, you all right? I said, I'm meeting the Temptations. So I'm a little nervous. Da, 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 da. So he takes me in the room. He said, you don't drink, do you? You look too young to drink. So he poured himself a drink. And the girls are sitting there. They looking at me and say, he cute. They giggling and stuff like that. And he looked at me and laughed. So I said, I started asking him questions, you know, and he was as nice and took as much time with me as it was unreal. He made the girls wait. They were like, Paul, he said, hey, you hear me talking to him? And so I'm like, I'm rich. So finally, you know, that was my first meeting. And I met Eddie at the Howard Theater, one of the shows. Eddie was hot back then. It was hard to meet him. But I wanted to meet him. I wanted to at least look in his face and say, I love your music. I want to be like you, da 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 da. And so I wait. I know he ain't gonna come out that front door. So I wait by, not the back, not the stage door where most people wait. I went to the basement door that goes around the backside and comes out in the alley. I knew that's where he was going. So he comes shoot through the door and there I am standing there. And he looks at me, he says, I can't fool you, huh? I said, nope. So I told him my name and da, 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 da. And he had these chicks with him. He said, well, look, I can't talk to you all night. Gotta go, da, da, da. And I said, well, thank you for talking with me, da, 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 da. He was a gentleman as nice as he could be. The thing that I guess they caught my attention more than anything. Once he got out the alley, the crowd saw him. And They went at him, and I thought they was going to kill him. They ripped his shirt off. They grabbed him, and then they pulled him out of his clothes. They took one of his shoes. That was when I said, I don't know if this is safe, but but it looks like a lot of fun. But so those are the two times I met Eddie and Paul. Years before I got, you know.
Yeah. So were you like hearing the rumblings of the reunion, or were you just kind of just content? Like, okay, if there is one, there is one. If there isn't one, then cool.
Man, here's what happened. We were leaving. We made a decision that we wanted to leave Motown, which was unheard of. You don't leave. Where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You don't leave Motown. We made a decision we wanted to leave. So we wanted to do, I think the first time the reunion idea came up was Kenny Gamble.
Okay.
Here's how it happened. We were talking about leaving. Otis and Kenny were great friends. So they started talking. So Kenny said, man, you guys come over here, baby. You see what we've done over here. We'll put the Temps back on the map. So all the planning is being done. And, we finally called Otis. So Kenny Gamble set up a date to come out to California to meet with us. So Kenny comes out, we meet, me and Melvin shared a big penthouse apartment. So Kenny comes up to the crib. Rest of the guys come. I think Richard was the only one there. He was in Detroit. So Kenny said, I need to talk to you guys. He said, what we really want to do is we want to record the original guys. So we're sitting there, we're kind of like, okay. So we want to bring Ed and David back and join with us. So Kenny was very, very cunning the way he approached it. He knew he couldn't just, you know, throw this at us hard. So he says, well, I'd like to do a project on this present group. And then I'd like to do a project on bringing Eddie and David back. And we're going to call that the reunion. So we're like, wow, this will shake it up. So we're all excited. I think a month went by, however long the time was. Kenny called back. He said, hey, O, we've been talking about this, and we decided that we don't want to record the present group. We just want to go and record the original guys. So we're not interested in Glenn. We're not interested in Richie. And wow. Otis said, what do you want us to do about that? I mean, they're in the group. They said, well, can you explain it to them? And, you know, so Otis is like, Kenny, come on, man. We can't do this to these guys. So Kenny said, somebody, I don't know, Kenny Otis, somebody said, why don't we do this? Give them some money, ask them to set out, and let us do the project and see how the project goes. If the project goes, then we'll just then bring them in, bring them back. And what we'll do is we'll set up you guys to do a segment with Ed and David in the group. And then we'll do a segment, this is a live performance, where they leave and do their own thing. So Eddie will do a set, David do a set, and then the Temps will close it out. How's that? That was supposed to be their approach. Well, you know, Otis come tell me, Richard, guys, they're not interested in you guys. So Otis says, so Richard was hurt. Richard was upset, which I understand because he was there from the beginning. Not just there from the beginning, but he was the one that taught Melvin how to do bass. He was Melvin's older cousin. Not only did he teach him how to sing bass, but Melvin was 13 years old when Richard went to Mama Rose and asked her, Mama, will you let Melvin Blue come out and sing with us? I'll look out for him. And she said, you take care of my baby if you don't. You know, so he was the one that took up for Melvin, fought for him. Melvin used to get a whole lot of guys want to beat him up, jump on him, fight him because of his voice. Richard had street cred. You ain't mess with Richard Street. Richard Street had a reputation for what I hear. I don't know. You know, I wasn't in Detroit, you know. But he wasn't no guy. He didn't take a mess, which was cool, which was good. Anyway, what was the original question? What was you asking?
The original question just like, how was hearing the rumblings of the reunion? Which you answered.
Next question then.
You know, obviously with the reunion and, you know, what you said, they were trying to say, you know, no Richard and no Glenn. How did Otis just fight to have you on, or was it just like...
Here's what happened. So after the meetings with Kenny, we hadn't talked to Otis and David about this. So they brought Otis and David out as they proposed the idea to Otis and David about doing the original guys. And so Eddie was like, well, I'm not the tenor for the Temps anymore. Glenn Leonard is. So what do you do with these guys? I mean, I'm not opposed to doing this, but I'm not gonna take food out of somebody else's mouth. I said, now that's character. That I'm thinking here now. See, everybody else ready to throw us away, right? And I'm saying, the one that they thought wasn't going to be favorable, you know, was thinking about us. So Eddie said, I'll come back and I'll do a project. He said, but I am not coming back to the Temptations. Glenn Leonard is the tenor. He's the first tenor for the Temptations. And it's not right to do this way. He said, I understand the fans want it. I know what we mean to the fans. I got a fan base myself. They love me being without you. He said, so we're going to give the best of both worlds. And I'm like, this guy not only can sing, but he got integrity and class. And that was when I the ultimate love and respect, because he showed me that, and I ain't nowhere in his category. You understand? I mean, with success, I can sing, but I haven't had the success he had. Usually, guys, when they're up there in the ozone somewhere, they ain't got time to consider all what's going on down here among the peons and all that kind of stuff. He was mindful, thoughtful. David was good. David was smart in that. David didn't say much. He wrote on Eddie's wisdom. David said, whatever you say, Eddie. And that was the way it went. So, but Eddie was the one that stood up. That's what made me really, really love him even more.
Wow, okay. So, I don't know if it's maybe the first rehearsal or first actual recording of the song, but how did you know that, oh, Eddie is not the same Eddie and I might or might not have to take the workload?
Wow. As you might imagine, to put together something like this, We'd never done it before. We didn't know any other groups that had. It was as though he would get hoarse a lot sooner So I would say, hey, just pull back. You know, I'll cover. And naturally, to put together something like that, it takes a lot of rehearsing, a lot of work. So by the time we got ready to go on the road, the wear and tear was starting to be visible. So I think we were at the Apollo, and Eddie wasn't sounding good on his segment, you know. And me, Otis, and Melvin, we tried to do some background things or even just some things off stage to kind of help it. And so when they came out to do the original Temptation set, I told him, I said, listen, I can hear what's going on. He said, yeah, well, you know, it's gotten this way. So I said, I'll help you. I said, I'll set up a mic. I said, now I can help you with the back. I can help with the background. I'll pad the background parts. I can't do nothing for the leads because, you know, you got to do those. So you got to find what you can do, what you can't do. He said, yeah, I know. So that was what we did. That was what we approached. The thing is, I never lost any love or respect for him. What I saw was as an honor. I get to assist, to help the man that encouraged me, that he's the reason why I'm even here. I saw it as a badge of honor. I don't often talk about it because I don't want to give the impression that I'm boasting myself or I had to help Eddie Kendricks. No, I didn't. Eddie Kendricks is Eddie Kendricks. I don't care how he sounded at the end. And it was obvious that the people loved him beyond all of that. I can remember him standing up there not able to hit the notes. And women would say, that's okay, baby. We know what the note is. And I'm like, wow. So that was a real, real sensitive piece of my experience in history with the Temps is the connection with Eddie. Eddie was an enigma. He was an interesting guy because he didn't know a lot about it. Everybody had secrets. There were times when he was extremely quiet. Then there were times when he was extremely vocal. I made sure he understood. I got your back. If you need me to stand in and do anything, I got your back. So, you know, he hugged me and said, all right, man, we good. You know, all that kind of stuff. So to have that as a part of my experience, I don't know what to say. I mean, that's the ultimate to me, to be intertwined with my hero. That I can't tell you what that means.
Yeah, and I love Standing on the Top as well. That's a good song.
Oh, Standing on Top.
Good, yeah. Song.
You know, it's funny because as good as things appeared to be going with this reunion thing, there were still people and a couple of the guys, one of the guys in particular, who really did want to see that that original, you know.
I can't blame it as a Temps fan, like, even though do a Richard or anybody like that, but I can see how older people that probably watched the original was like, oh, we got a chance to maybe see him, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that, as time, we were in Concord, California. We were at the tail end of the reunion tour. And I overhear a conversation, right? Melvin's talking to Eddie. And I happened to be coming down the hall to get the door. And I can hear Melvin don't realize his voice carries, you know? He got that big.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
he can't even whisper, you know? So he's like, man, you know, the people really want you. You know, Glenn's a nice guy. Da, 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 da. And he can sing his ass off. Da, da, da. But he ain't at the kingdom. They want you back. So he was talking from the perspective of, we're going to find a way to ease Richard. We don't know what David's going to do, but we're going to find a way to ease you back in. And I haven't shared this with anybody else in an interview, but I was hurt. I was hurt, but I didn't say nothing. And I didn't say nothing because it was Eddie Kendricks, my mentor. And I'm thinking, wow, okay. Well, maybe this is it. I mean, I've done something that will forever be, you know, special to me. I had a chance to be in the group. I had a chance to sing with my mentor. You know, it ain't gonna last forever. So I'm thinking now that the plan is gonna be to ease me out, ease Richard out, bring Eddie back and try to put up with David. So I'm like, do I want to stay and get fired by the group that I love? No, that ain't gonna look good on my resume. So we finished the reunion tour in Concord, California. The next morning, we're headed to Reno. I made a decision the night before that was my last show. It's got to end somewhere. I'm not going to be embarrassed and put out. You know, I didn't want to be a part. I knew because Eddie was going to still need the help. Without another voice, another tenor voice back there, he'd have been totally exposed. So I got to make up my mind now what I'm going to do. Now, I grew up in church. My daughter lived in San Francisco, my oldest daughter at that time. So I said, I'm going to go up to San Francisco, spend maybe 3-4 weeks, month up there, rest, think about what I'm going to do next. And so the guys are downstairs in the lobby the next morning after the gig in Concord. So Otis said, where's Glenn? So he said, yeah, I'm coming down here. So Otis calls up to my room. Say, hey, man, we're down in the lobby waiting on you. I say, oh, y'all go ahead on. I'm done. My exact words. So he said, well, come on down, man. We're ready to go. I said, y'all go ahead on. I'm done. He said, what are you talking about, Glenn? I said, I'm done, though. I said, I know y'all want Eddie back. I want to walk away. I ain't going to be somebody taking my place. I'm leaving. I love Eddie. And I would never want to be the person in the way of him coming back, whether I thought it would work or not. He said, man, can we talk about this? You know, it ain't nothing going on. I said, no, if I don't make the decision now, I'll be talked back into it. And I'm not feeling right. I'm not feeling like I'm on land right with the way this is going. So that was where I left. The story that they put out was that I was partying over the weekend and had a drinking problem and, all the temps had drinking problems except for Otis. He's the only one that didn't drink. Richard didn't drink, you know, but Dennis, David, all of us did. Drugs and liquor. Okay, that's just everybody know. So I figured I want to leave on my own terms. And that was what I did, but that wasn't the way they prayed. So I didn't go behind them, make no big deal out of it. But people in the industry kind of had an idea of what was going on.
One more thing before we get out here. You know it's almost Christmas, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just, I believe there's this song that you, no, okay. All right. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Yes. Silent Night. Silent Night. Do you feel like proud that you just know that you're just in history, even though you're in the Temptations? We did all these songs with, you know, people might not play the Temptations all the time. You know, year round, you know, at least your voice is everywhere.
You know, history is an interesting thing because it's clips of one's experience and life that's documented, that's put up to show you some of what they, who they were, and some of what they did. The last thing I thought I'd be remembered for was a Christmas song. Here's the blessing in that. It's not your commercial song. So the people don't hear it every day or every week or however long they play. But for the last 40 years, every Christmas, my calendar blows up, the phone blows up, the radio stations are planning. And it took me a minute to look back and finally say, wow, every year I'm still remembering. It's a wonderful thing. I didn't expect it though. Caught me off guard.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not the typical, oh, we just going to sing Silent Night straight through and add temps. And it's like, no, we're going to, I don't want to equivalent this, but we're going to Marvin Gaye, the national anthem. And we're just going to sit
Well, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we did. We took it out to traditional mode. And this one lady, I don't even know who she is. She's just a big Temptation fan, just like you. She said, well, it's time for In My Mind.
That's what she called it.
That's the first line that didn't say In My Mind. She said, hey, y'all, online. She said, hey, y'all, it's time for In My Mind.
I mean, look, I think that's one of the things that makes it different. It's just then, just because I don't know if y'all, if that was written tonight or if it's just like, okay, we're going to add it before the song comes in.
I'm going to tell you how it happened. We were in the studio. We had another project slated. Somehow the producer got changed. So the only guy that was around, I think it was Gil Askey, Harold Johnson. Those are the two guys that did the Christmas album. So they had this time, this space blocked out for to do a project on the Temptations, and the producers changed. And so Barry was saying, well, you got to do something because the money's already been spent. The musicians are there, and the studio time is already paid for. So y'all get in there and do something. Do a Christmas song. I don't care what you do. Do something. So Otis said, we ain't had a Christmas album in years. I hadn't had one since the one they did in the early days of Pimp. So they started playing around. And they started that beginning of Silent Night. And then it just started ad-libbing. And then after the chorus, then it said, now Glenn, you come in. So I came in. And it just kind of unfolded from there, you know. Then the whole project started coming into view. You know, the next songs and a few something, then, you know, before we know it, we got a classic album. Don't Even Know It.
Yeah, that's especially in the Black community, that is played
every
all the time. Yes.
Was not playing at all. Tiply off the top of our heads.
Yeah. You know, it's in my mind, the intro, the high note in the intro is just. Yeah. Well, everybody, look, we're going to have to do a part two, but for now, we've been having fun with Glenn Leonard. This man has stories for days. I hope you learned something today about you know, just tips or just anything, you know, it's very insightful. So Glenn, I'm going to say thank you so much for today.
Thank you, and, my friend. Been a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, of course. So I'm going to say from Glenn and from me, Brown time is all the time, and we are out.